Good afternoon. My name is Steve Luckaball, and I'd like to welcome you to the Adapting Healthcare Financing in Changing Revenue Landscapes webinar. This webinar is brought to you by the Partnerships for Care HIV Training, Technical Assistance, and Collaboration Center, HIV-TAC. The Partnerships for Care project is a three-year multi-agency project funded by the Secretary's Minority AIDS Initiative Fund and the Affordable Care Act. The goals of the project are to, one, expand provision of HIV testing, prevention, care, and treatment in health centers serving communities highly impacted by HIV. Two, to build sustainable partnerships between health centers and their state health department. And three, to improve health outcomes among people living with HIV, especially among racial and ethnic minorities. The project is supported by the HIV Training, Technical Assistance, and Collaboration Center, HIV-TAC. Our speaker today is Marissa Tonelli. Ms. Tonelli is the Senior Capacity Building Manager for Health HIV's National Center for Healthcare Capacity Building. She is responsible for managing HIV prevention, care, and treatment capacity building programs for health departments, community-based organizations, AIDS service organizations, and healthcare organizations. Marissa leads capacity building assistance that focuses on organizational sustainability and fiscal health in the era of healthcare reform, which includes funding diversification, third-party billing and reimbursement, and business model development. She also serves as a senior capacity building manager of the Health HCV Initiative, an advocacy and education initiative of Health HIV. Marissa has been providing capacity building assistance with Health HIV since June 2012. Prior to joining Health HIV, Marissa was a CDC fellow with a field assignment at the DC Department of Health's HIV/AIDS, Hepatitis, TB, and STI Administration, where she provided technical assistance on tuberculosis and viral hepatitis prevention to community-based organizations. Marissa received a Bachelor's of Science in Public Health from the George Washington University School of Public Health and Health Services. Please join me in welcoming Ms. Tonelli.
Thank you so much, Steve. I think that was one of my longest bios. I didn't realize I had done so much in 4 years at Health HIV, but it's fun to recap. And as you mentioned, over the past 2 years, I've done significant work with nonprofit healthcare organizations, HIV organizations, health departments, community-based organizations, and AIDS service organizations, primarily related to how public funding is shifting and ensuring fiscal diversification and sustainability, including third-party reimbursement in this era of changing revenue. So thank you again, and thank you to Maya Tech for inviting me to present. I'm very happy to be here today, and I hope for all the health funders on the line that I can share something new with you today to help you ensure sustainability of your HIV programs and public health programs moving forward. So I'll get started. Great. So our learning objectives today are, one, to discuss the financial impact of the Affordable Care Act, Medicaid expansion, and the changing payer mix on health centers, to describe federal and state level policy implications affecting health center financial sustainability, and also to identify some opportunities and best practices, lessons learned for health centers to leverage payment reform changes to ensure sustainability of your HIV prevention, care, and treatment services. So we know the healthcare system has changed significantly, especially as healthcare reform implementation has come to play. We're seeing a reduction in federal and state funding for public health services, a new focus, a renewed focus on quality, collaborative, and accountable care models, and also a value-based payment shift in the healthcare system. So moving towards paying providers for value, quality, and collaboration versus services. Healthcare reform, or the Affordable Care Act, has been one of the biggest impact on the healthcare system today. And we know it also impacts other programs and systems that we work within as health centers, as nonprofits, including HRSA. So, you know, P4C is funded through HRSA, Bureau of Primary Health Care. We're also seeing healthcare reform impact the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention funding and how they are implementing their programming, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, SAMHSA, Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, sorry, that's CMS there, and also how federally qualified health centers, FQHCs, which many of you may be, and lookalikes are operating right now. So I wanted to point out just a couple of things, and we all, you know, having been in the healthcare sector since the Affordable Care Act was implemented in March of 2010, we know that it has enhanced our patients' rights and protections. We know it's mandating essential health benefits and mandated states to establish state health insurance marketplaces. And as an account of that, we see almost 20 million new Americans have gained health coverage as of March 2016, which is huge. So these are potentially new clients at health centers, ASOs, CBOs that we are seeing, and it's allowing us to leverage third-party billing as a new opportunity to increase funding diversification through new clients that have access to health insurance and the reimbursement system. I also wanted to point out that at the same time, we have, through the ACA, required that private insurance plans cover the recommended U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, USPSTF, preventive services, those that are evidence-based services for adults that have a rating A or B from USPSTF, and that includes STI screening, HIV, hepatitis C screening, diabetes, obesity, counseling, and testing, as well as so STI counseling, tobacco use, health, diet, nutritional counseling, as well as linkage to care and retention and care services, so health navigation and care coordination services. So this is really important because these are services that are available to clients and that are reimbursed without any cost sharing for the patients. And additionally, wanted to point out, we know that plans also are required to contract with essential community providers, and this is under the Affordable Care Act legislation as well. So that includes federally qualified health centers, other Ryan White providers, particularly those serving high-risk special needs and underserved individuals. And other states have also had additional essential community providers included in their marketplaces in addition to the CMS-required categories that they laid forth. And also the essential health benefits must be included by all plans. So what does this look like? I particularly wanted to point out the preventive and wellness services and chronic disease management. As we know, we're working in preventing HIV and also caring for individuals living with HIV. Mental health and substance abuse disorder treatments also must be covered, including behavioral health treatment, many of which the people living with HIV that we're serving are also dealing with mental health or substance abuse comorbidities, and also prescription drug coverage, which is very important for individuals that are living with HIV, not only to cover their HIV medications, but also any other co-infections that they may be living with, such as hepatitis C or other chronic conditions that they're living with. And how has it impacted the clients? So we know that they have improved access to insurance, no lifetime or annual benefits, and a reduction in financial burden. So for many, there's a new ability to purchase insurance with subsidies or tax credits. There are out-of-pocket maximums, the coverage of preventive health services, as I mentioned before, without cost sharing, and also this prohibition on discriminatory premium rates based on gender, health status, HIV status, etc. We also know that there's additional quality coverage. So again, preventive care has been promoted more than it had in the past, as well as coordinated quality care. And there's also an increased transparency, and should be more as well, providing individuals with more information and services about their care. And we also have an increasing opportunity for health and well-being through new funding, new initiatives, new investments in prevention, wellness, and focus on public health itself, all as a result of this healthcare reform implementation. On the Medicare side, I just wanted to point out one piece in particular, which is this improved coverage of prevention benefits that began in 2011 without coinsurance or deductibles. And so I wanted to point, that's again looking at the USPSTF preventive services. This is important as well because, again, the access to HIV testing, which is rated an A, and so individuals that adults ages 18, I think, to must have at least one HIV test in their lifetime, and it's even higher for those that are at risk. So we know that the coverage for HIV testing has increased, as I mentioned before, STI, hepatitis C, and then counseling, which is really important. So again, in the Medicare side for the elderly or disabled, this is another important kind of inaction that came from the Affordable Care Act. And also with this comes some challenges. So there are new challenges both for the providers and the patients. So assisting patients in identifying the right plan for them, having the provider and pharmacy that's in their network, understanding the formularies and being able to compare options. That's been a challenge both on the patient and the provider side. And as I mentioned, formulary coverage. So ensuring it has coverage for all of your HIV, hepatitis, or other chronic disease treatment regimens without cost sharing or with limited cost sharing is important. And then lastly, on the provider side, this renewed urgency to contract with these health plans and providers if organizations have not been doing so already. So ensuring that you're contracting with all of the qualified health plans in marketplaces that are serving your client population or covering your client population. Medicaid expansion has been a huge political issue as we've been looking at this over the last 5-6 years. We know that currently, and this is as of June of this year, so last month, 19 states have elected not to expand Medicaid. I know out of the P4C four states, that would only include Florida, so the other Maryland, Massachusetts, and New York, as you know, have chosen to expand. And then there's also 6 states that have expanded Medicaid but are using an alternative to the traditional expansion model, and you can see those states in blue there. And I wanted to point this out as, you know, certainly something we've been looking at as an advocacy organization as well, which is that the ACA has changed this insurance landscape, but the expansion versus the non-expansion states have really made it an uneven playing ground across the country. This is actually some information shared by HRSA, and it shows that you can see on the left the Medicaid expansion states. In 2014, there was still, you know, a lack of coverage for individuals, although uninsured rates have gone down. They've gone down significantly in the Medicaid expansion states. They seem to be pretty steady on the uninsured, the green bars on the non-Medicaid expansion states, holding steady at about 36%. So you can see 20% more individuals, uninsured individuals in the non-expansion states. So that's pretty significant. And another kind of couple of pieces to point out with the Affordable Care Act implementation is, again, as I mentioned, we'll go into this a little bit, the reduced funding and redistribution of funding based on the Affordable Care Act implementation. So a redirection of funds often towards clinical care and away from some preventive services. There's changing reimbursements and payer mixes, new rules for medical billing, which not only could lead to more errors and could be more costly, but also requires more billing expertise on the part of the healthcare organizations. And there's still this tremendous uncertainty, and I'll talk about Ryan White in a second, but still this uncertainty around what will happen with some of our government programs and government safety nets that have really been kind of the cornerstone, especially in HIV, of providing comprehensive quality care to individuals for many, many years. And then there's on the other side many opportunities. So with more people having access to insurance, access to services, that's a potential for more reimbursement for the healthcare organizations as well. Enhanced care coordination being improved is another benefit both for patients and the providers. And Medicaid payment reform, as I mentioned, focusing on value and quality. And there's this continuing role of the Ryan White HIV/AIDS program, as I mentioned. It continues to play a crucial role in for access to insurance, medication, and care for people living with HIV. And I particularly wanted to point out one of the programs, which is called the AIDS Drug Assistance Program, known as ADAP. And I know every state, all of you may be familiar with your state ADAP or may not be familiar with your state ADAP, but it is a state-administered program. It's authorized under Part B of the Ryan White HIV/AIDS program, and it provides medications and also assists with co-pays, insurance premiums, and deductibles for low-income people living with HIV who have limited or no coverage through private insurance, Medicaid, or Medicare. So this is a really great service. I wanted to point out that a great resource for the P4C projects to link to, link your eligible people living with HIV you're working with to this resource if they are unable to purchase insurance and unable to pay for their medications. And it provides, you know, comprehensive services for uninsured or ineligible people living with HIV as well. So not just the drug assistance program, but beyond that, the Ryan White HIV/AIDS program provides a variety of comprehensive services. So actually at the end of this slide deck, I have a link to and some contact information to your four ADAP leads, ADAP coordinators in the four states in New York, Maryland, Massachusetts, and Florida. And also, I believe Steve pointed out, but in the handout section, there is the ADAP member directory available. So feel free to pull that up and download. You can find information to contact your ADAP program coordinator. Lastly, just wanted to mention there's still, you know, ongoing needs as we move forward in the HIV realm and others, which is improving insurance coverage and literacy. And so there are other HRSA-funded programs that are available that are doing really great work in this, including the ACE-TA Center. And I've added their contact information as well at the end of this slide deck. So I'm going to talk for a minute about some of the national healthcare funding implications and public health funding. And wanted to point out specifically on the slide, federal funding for public health, which has declined over time. And so there's a couple set of numbers here. So $31.4 billion to $28.9, about $2.5 billion between the years of 2010 and 2012. And that's changed, of course. We're in 2016 now, and we've continued to see some of that decline over time. We know that discretionary government money is changing, and we know there's uncertainty, especially with the political environment and it being an election year. So there's concern in all state and territorial health agencies and federal health agencies around budget cuts that could be coming down the pike and are expected to continue. Particularly wanted to point out, this is a 2017 request for funding for HIV services. It's about $30 billion for domestic HIV services. So you can see the pie chart, how it breaks down from care and treatment, which would be the Ryan White HIV/AIDS program, prevention, CDC, research, primarily in the NIH, and then housing assistance. Again, that can be housing and urban development or the HOPWA program, housing opportunities for people living with HIV, which is funded through the Ryan White program. And here you can see how even though it has increased over time, and you can see that in the total domestic line at the bottom of this chart here, we know that it's being redirected away from public health services and especially from prevention services and focusing on care. So we know we need to start thinking as healthcare organizations and as nonprofits how to better fund and cover prevention services, whether it's through third-party billing, increasing other funding opportunities and diversifying funding or leveraging existing funding from Ryan White and other programs to really ensure that we're still not only providing comprehensive care but preventing HIV disease in the U.S. So the changing payer mix is another big concern of organizations as we're looking at how to diversify our fiscal revenue. We know that in Medicaid expansion states, health centers have a higher revenue per patient and is a larger share of the revenue, but we know that as well there's still many uncompensated care costs. So individuals who are not covered by insurance, not able to pay for services also is a huge issue. Again, why it's important if you have uninsured individuals living with HIV, the ADAP program and the Ryan White program are really important access points for individuals to have free or low-cost care, especially if they're still not insured, especially those in the Medicaid non-expansion states like Florida. And you may have similar pie charts for your organization individually, but we know as a whole, on average, and this is 2013 data, as you can see, health center revenues primarily came from Medicaid followed by grant funding. And so you can see Medicaid, private insurance is only about 8%, 6% self-pay, 6% Medicare, 2% public coverage, and then the rest is a combination of Section 3330 grants, state, local, private grants and contracts, and other federal contracts. So on the next slide, I'll point out that data also shows 69%, so a bit more than 2/3 of health centers' operating revenues are through direct charges. So as I mentioned, Medicaid, private, self-pay, et cetera. And then the non-patient revenue is about 45%, and I listed those before. So knowing that this funding is shifting, knowing that already there is maybe not a 50%, depending on the health center, but at least 45% of health center revenue and financing is made up of local grants and contracts, state grant and contract, and general public health funding. We know that it's important to seize these opportunities from the Affordable Care Act. As newly insured clients are coming into services, there's opportunities to collect payment. We know there's ACA-related funding opportunities to improve quality in primary care and incentivize value and quality in primary care. And this ultimately will decrease our dependence on this unsteady or uncertain state and federal funding and increase sustainability. So I just wanted to summarize that way. Right now, there are some opportunities, as I mentioned, for health centers to increase their revenue and to diversify their revenue, more importantly. And I highlighted a couple of these. There's five kind of pieces that I put out here. One is the increasing federal grants for health centers and primary care providers. Two, incentivized based quality improvement and service delivery reforms, which would increase reimbursement rates, expanding coverage through insurance exchanges and expanded Medicaid. So again, more individuals accessing insurance and thus being able to bill their insurers and having reimbursement from those clients, new clients or existing clients that weren't insured previously. And increasing Medicaid revenues in general and the Medicare payment rates are all kind of five ACA-related revenue opportunities for health centers that I wanted to point out. I pulled a couple of headlines for the last, or press releases, I think, from HHS for the last 2 years, just a few of them to point out that there has been a pretty significant additional funding specifically to health centers over the last couple of years as it relates to the Affordable Care Act. And the P4C program is just one of them that has come through from HRSA. So there are a lot of opportunities. There was funding of community health centers in 2015, a couple of funding opportunities, 2016 for different types of programs. And currently, I wanted to point out two open opportunities which some of you may or may not be aware of, the Health Center Program Service Area Competition, which are due mid-August and the end of August. There's two different announcements that I saw there, and that's just an opportunity to ensure continued access to comprehensive, culturally competent, and quality primary care services for communities and vulnerable populations served by health centers. And so I didn't look specifically at the eligibility requirements, but just wanted to point out that there are grant opportunities. There probably will continue to be grant opportunities that are new and different and might require you to expand some of your services or expand your mission and some of the work you do and improve the quality of your programs. But you should keep that in mind and constantly be aware, sign up for the list to get those grant notifications and be aware that new funding opportunities are continually coming out from HHS and other federal partners. And then I also mentioned the incentive-based reform opportunities. So many of you may be patient-centered medical homes. I'm not sure exactly how that breaks down, but we know on average about 60% or more of health centers are PCMH-recognized. Federally qualified health centers also receive incentive-based payments, Medicaid health homes. State primary care associations also have health home initiatives, so those are state-based health home initiatives. HRSA's funding for quality improvement in health centers, and also a variety of different payment and service delivery models that have come out and been implemented by the CMS Innovation Center. I know in terms of the state innovation models, both Massachusetts, Maryland, and New York all have state innovation models. And there's also demonstration grants and delivery system reform incentive payments as well. So these are all opportunities that should be researched, looked into. Some states might have access to these incentivized payment opportunities, and you should certainly consider it as a health center to maximize your revenue and increase payments as well. And on the prevention side, as I had mentioned before, we now have more preventive services that are required to be covered by all private health plans. There's also incentives for patients to receive preventive care, and also several different models and networks being developed since the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. So the primary care extension center models, I know New York and Maryland have both partnered with lead states to implement some initiatives under that particular program that was authorized under the Affordable Care Act, the community-based collaborative care network. So, you know, integrating care and collaborating, developing care networks as well has been another kind of mode for organizations to leverage resources and also maximize reimbursement for the services that they're providing. And lastly, wanted to point out kind of this new understanding of how community health workers or allied health professionals outside of the prescribers and the traditional provider types can now also reimburse for their services. So this is very state-based. We know that Medicaid did put out some language in 2013 that they would reimburse for preventive services from health professionals that are outside of a clinical licensure system. And again, the states have kind of taken this on, every state Medicaid, to really look into it and determine how to move that forward. So some examples of services that non-licensed providers could potentially reimburse for and are currently covered in Medicaid, managed care, or other plans are care coordination, educational counseling. So again, in the HIV realm, that's very important. Home visits, group health education, and, you know, some other opportunities, some also one-on-one interaction with counselors as well. So it's important to be paying attention to some of the new policies, especially those that are coming out from the Health and Human Department of Health and Human Services, Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, all opportunities for you to leverage your existing staff, your existing resources at your health center to maximize reimbursement and have access to expanded services and provide additional services to your clients as well. I also wanted to point out that it's important, and I've heard this before, so from other health centers, to really think outside the box. So I have a couple of examples. I have another example I wanted to share as well. That's just kind of one that I've heard before, but the Rural Economic Development Loan and Grant Program. I know I was trying to figure out how many health centers in the P4C program were rural health centers, and there may only be one or two. However, it's an opportunity that folks might not think about to look at programs that are coming out of this type of a funding opportunity for economic development and loan and grant program. And for example, they're funding things such as facilities and equipment, payments for medical care to rural residents, startup venture costs, community development assistance, and other kind of business expansion opportunities as well. And also the SBA 7A loans as well provide small businesses. So for small healthcare practitioners or small health centers, helping you purchase equipment or real estate to expand your business, establish a new business, or also train your staff is another opportunity as well. And some other foundations, Hearst, Pfizer, others, also important to look at. I wanted to point out one kind of fun example from an organization that I've worked with called Iris House. So for any New York City-based organizations, you may be familiar with their executive director who we're close with. Her name is Ingrid Floyd. But she, for example, was looking at how she could get funding from her representatives in her state and also folks, any kind of legislation in the state where they can really advocate for their organization. And they did this by really tracking how many of their clients were coming in were from different zip codes, so had different representatives within their state, and advocating on behalf of their clients. So being able to say, we have X number of clients that are in your jurisdiction. They will be voting this year. It is an election year. So using that kind of as an advocacy piece to help kind of move funding in the direction of public health. And so I thought that was interesting because that was really thinking outside the box to advocate for why increased funding would be needed and thinking about who are your constituents and where can you really be able to speak on behalf of your constituents and make those advocacy points for increased public health and health center and HIV funding within your organization and within your jurisdiction, much of which is happening on a state-based level. I wanted to point out a couple of case studies, and this is based on at the end of this slide deck, I have a few strategic responses that I'd like you to consider, and this is just one of them. So partnership development is a piece that I think is a really important consideration in this time and place. It can not only increase your access to new clients, so by partnering with an organization, you have the potential to enter new geographies, you know, reach a new focus population or reach new clients, and also develop your agency's knowledge, capabilities, services, and ultimately increase funding. So partnering on funding opportunities, you know, sharing or subcontracting on funding opportunities if it's grant funding, et cetera. And I wanted to point out one specific community-wide medical home model that really highlights kind of the key aspects of what a coordinated care network might look like. So a health center that was partnering with community-based organizations, and this is Whitman Walker Health, and they partnered with three organizations. They implemented formal contractual partnerships that included financing dollar amounts with these three organizations. And what they were noticing as a health center overall was that they were losing a lot of their clients who were either coming in for testing and not coming back afterwards to be provided care. They had patients that were coming in for one appointment and not returning afterwards. And so they reached out to their community partners because they knew that reengaging these clients would eventually improve not only health outcomes, improve the quality of care they were delivering, but also would improve treatment rates as they'd be able to provide more services for these clients. So they decided to partner with HIPS that worked with transgender individuals, primarily and sex workers, Food and Friends, delivering, that's a food delivery service, so partnering with an organization that did food delivery, again, to improve the quality of the care that they're delivering to all their clients, and then the Women's Collective, which was reaching primarily Black African American women in the D.C. region. So all ways for them to improve kind of this coordinated care effort and ultimately expand their services, expand their reach to clients, and improve the coordinated effort in the community, which was Washington, D.C. So that's one example. I want to give the next example, which is Christie's Place, another nonprofit service organization. This is in San Diego, and I apologize for not picking any Massachusetts, Maryland, or Florida sites, but I do have a New York example next. And Christie's Place did a similar thing, which is really working with wraparound providers to help get their clients back into care and stay in medical care. So again, you know, another possible model to look at here in San Diego, based in San Diego. And mergers and acquisitions, another kind of form of a partnership in a way that is also something to consider. So we do know, so Boom Health was the merger of Citywide Harm Reduction and Bronx Aid Services. And prior to that, one of the organizations was doing Medicaid billing, but it allowed both to now do Medicaid and private insurance billing and have on-site healthcare services and also have on-site syringe access services, prevention services, housing, and a variety of food and nutrition, legal services. So again, improving kind of this medical home for their clients and increasing reach to new clients, which brought in more revenue for the health center and also improved the sustainability of the nonprofit, which was Citywide Harm Reduction. And so this happened a few years ago in New York City, a great example of a really effective merger that happened. Another piece kind of strategy to consider is thinking about third-party billing, especially for prevention services, especially for HIV prevention. As we know, as I mentioned, public funding for many of these services in clinics, in clinical settings, is going to likely transition over the next few years. And we're hearing that across the board, whether it's health departments, community-based nonprofits, and health centers as well. I wanted to point out that Massachusetts, again, one of the first states to implement health care reform, which is great. I'm actually from Massachusetts, so I'm very proud of that fact. And they've almost reached a 100% rate of insured residents, which is great. Now, looking at transitioning away from public funding, as health care reform was being implemented, the health department and their community partners encouraged clinics to move away from public funding, move away from city-funded test kits, city-funded testing programs, grant-funded testing programs, and move towards a reimbursement model. And so the clinics contracted with insurance providers. They were trained how to talk to their clients about HIV testing and why it was being reimbursed and how it would be processed. And their visits billed to public and private insurances increased about 31%, which is great. And I did want to point out, it's important to point out that they had visits decline mainly because of clients' concern about confidentiality and the ability to access, quote, free HIV testing elsewhere from other community-based clinics. But ultimately, as we move forward and with deep budget cuts that are going to be happening down the road, and this is just an example from 2010, as big budget cuts hit the state of Massachusetts and their health department, these clinics were able to remain open and financially viable because they had transitioned to a billing model. And so we know that billing commercial and public insurance for services can really help close budget gaps and offset the cost of providing free services, which many organizations do to patients without insurance, and could be the difference between a clinic closing its doors or achieving long-term sustainability. So really important to think about many, especially emergency rooms, health centers that have just relied on state or city-funded test kits, it's probably not going to be the way of the world in the next few years. And so we really need to consider how we can leverage some of these new opportunities from the Affordable Care Act for counseling, for testing. We know it's probably not going to be reimbursed at the rate that a grant program would be, but you know, with the making the assumptions and the thinking ahead and forecasting and understanding that those grant programs may not be around forever, it's important, a very important piece to think about is starting to bill for these preventive health services in HIV and otherwise. I also wanted to, again, talk about another strategy, so the primary care quality improvement incentives. And I have a Massachusetts example on the next slide. We know that Massachusetts have been awarded about $245 million to improve primary care, and health centers offer longer hours. Many states also had some of these primary care quality improvement models being implemented starting from the federal level. And they funded and supported individuals to get enrolled in health coverage and also have access, as I mentioned, to health centers that had improved primary care services, longer hours, cultural competency, etc. And here are just some of the examples of these types of programs. So health centers were partnering with the state's Office of Health and Human Services. There was 10 that were developing these coordinated partnerships between health sectors and considered cultural competence as one of the most important parts of payment reform as well. And it was prioritizing the needs of health centers that had not received some of the other incentive-based payment reform opportunities and those that were not FQHCs or PCMHs as well, PCMH recognized, that were receiving higher reimbursement rates. And there was also a couple, I just highlighted a couple of other kind of primary care quality improvement initiatives. There's one that's investing in infrastructure, building the success of primary care medical homes, which was assisting primary care practice to transition into certified medical homes. So again, a lot of these programs trickling down from the federal level, as I mentioned earlier, trickling down to the state level and bringing significant amount of funding, new funding into states, upwards of $250 million into states to increase their quality primary care programs and health center operations. And then I also wanted to mention Medicaid health homes. And so we know kind of in New York's care coordination models, they have a health home model as well that's focusing on linkages in community and social support services. And then the Medicaid medical home program, again, similar, incentivizes primary care providers who meet national medical home standards. So a lot of these federal initiatives trickling down into the states and becoming a health home, providing more incentives to providers for quality care and value-based care, and also kind of improving the care system overall. So not only opportunities to improve your organization's operations, but also to improve reimbursement and increase that funding diversification. I didn't want to leave Florida out, so I did find that Florida has implemented one of the CMS's healthcare innovation models. And it's led by the University of Miami in partnership with Medicaid plans, University of Florida, and a few other organizations. And so this was an award to improve care and access for children in Miami-Dade area that had asthma, obesity, type 2 diabetes, and STDs. And so again, this was looking at improving services and expanding services in school-based health clinics. However, this focus on working within health clinics, within health centers to improve quality care and incentivize quality care was really important. And again, that was a CMS innovation model. So these federal programs trickling down to states and allowing new funding opportunities and incentive-based payment opportunities for health centers. So what now? I just have a couple of slides left. So I just wanted to kind of close some of my comments with mentioning that really now, if not 2 years ago, really, is the time to adapt, to acclimate, to secure funding to sustain your programs, particularly in the HIV realm as there's uncertainty around HIV funding, uncertainty around public health funding in general, and particularly on the prevention side, as I mentioned several times as well. So it's important to re-examine strategies and your role as a safety net provider to leverage new opportunities and mitigate challenges, possibly develop a new vision if that's needed, and integrate a nimble, flexible, dynamic business model as well. So I wanted to, on the next two slides, talk about summarize some of the strategic responses that can be considered. We know that health centers are competing more and more with hospitals, which is a challenge. But investing in some capital improvements, whether it's in health IT or any sort of kind of programming and a new equipment that may or may not help to bring in more clients, is really essential. You want to become the provider of choice in your community so that you have access to ensuring clients that are coming through your doors and increasing your revenue as well. So how can you demonstrate whether it's quality, expanding your programs to become this provider of choice and really compete more and more with many of these hospital organizations. It's important to also consider reorganizing some of your workforce to improve efficiency. So we know there's a focus on care management and care coordination. We know that increasing and ensuring that your clients, especially people living with HIV, are engaged in care, retained in care, are important not only for health outcomes, but again, also for reimbursement and billing. And so these are some opportunities to think about. How will you reorganize to really improve these efficiencies? How will you leverage new opportunities to utilize allied healthcare professionals, such as community health workers, to provide some of these services that are now billable to Medicaid without a licensed clinical practitioner? So all things to consider kind of in this reorganization of your workforce. And then also, how can you maximize your revenue through enhanced medical documentation and coding? And I didn't mention this previously in our conversations, but did want to mention it now, that this is also a new important piece as organizations have transitioned to ICD-10 coding, and understanding that medical documentation is essential to maximizing revenue as you submit claims to insurance providers. And so understanding kind of the coding and medical documentation lingo and procedures, and making sure you are doing that to the best of your ability and chasing down every dollar, is going to be important as well. And I can share some resources for that at the end of this. And I also wanted to mention expansion of services for billing. So again, hiring, using the billable providers, you know, also considering the community health workers as a billable provider, depending on your state legislation, how they move health worker certifications forward, et cetera. Thinking about expanding programs for seniors. So if you are not serving seniors, think about expanding programs for seniors. So we know that annual wellness visits in Medicare are reimbursed at a high rate. How can you expand your services, your programs, and your reach to other new potential clients that could bring in a lot of revenue for your organization? And then also there's these opportunities to negotiate with the managed care organizations for value-based reimbursement. So the higher quality care, the higher reimbursement you will recoup for your organization. And lastly, wanted to mention partnerships. So considering partnerships with community-based organizations that can help you to increase the retention and engagement rates of your clients. And also, where can you partner with hospital networks? And do you want to partner with hospital networks who may or may not be kind of the biggest competitor for you right now? So those are kind of just five strategic responses to consider. Again, every state is up against different policies as federal initiatives are being implemented. There's also state level initiatives. Medicaid expansion is the big example of that, where we know there's huge detriments to health insurance access, et cetera, for individuals uninsured in Medicaid non-expansion states. But again, these are all things to kind of keep in mind and keep abreast of as new policy comes out, new memos from CMS, new funding opportunities for HHS. From HHS and other federal partners. So it's important to kind of just be aware of that and make sure you're as educated as possible as you move forward and kind of re-strategize to ensure sustainability of your program. So the next slide, I have questions. I think we have about 5 minutes left, so I'm happy to take some questions, and I also can have some resources to point you to as well.
Okay, so we have a few moments here to take some questions. If you have any questions, please enter them into the questions pane on the GoToWebinar toolbar. We have the resources here.
As we're waiting for questions, or maybe we'll see if we get some, since we're on this slide, I can point out that Health HIV does have a few resources on our website. There's many organizations that are doing a lot of great work as well around sustainability. And we've done through our HRSA-funded program that we have done a lot of work around fiscal sustainability. So I just wanted to point out some opportunities. We have webinars that have been archived, including series on medical documentation and coding, which I believe the P4C program also had access to as well. So you should have had access to some of those materials. We have a desk reference guide, but if you didn't, we also have it on Health HIV's website, and also kind of some contracting services for HIV prevention. So if any of you're interested in any of those, please feel free to go to Health HIV's website and check out our webinars and some of our other guides that we've posted on there.
Okay, we did get one question here. Does insurance pay for case manager services?
So that's a great question. I don't know where the individual is from, but the easy answer is yes. So technically, counseling is covered through private insurance. It falls under kind of one of the essential health benefits. It is a covered preventive services. Counseling is a covered preventive service, whether it's prevention counseling and kind of some other, and linkage to care and retention and care, I think I mentioned on one of the first slides. So some of those case managers type services. Where it becomes an issue is who is delivering the service, and is it a licensed credentialed provider? And is that provider credentialed or impaneled with the health plan? So it is variable depending on who is providing the service, but in theory, if it is a licensed clinical provider providing the case management services, it would be billable. As I mentioned, some states are looking at how to credential community health workers and non-clinical, non-licensed staff to be able to bill for those types of services, case management services and other prevention and testing services. So that could be an opportunity down the road depending on your state policy.
Okay. Anyone else have any questions? Not seeing any right now. This is the other list of resources here.
Right, so I referenced this earlier, the ACE TA Center, which has outreach and enrollment resources for clients, particularly living with HIV, but also can be utilized across the board. And then wanted to point out the ADAP contacts, which since you downloaded or if you download the handout for the ADAP member directory, you'll have the same information, but it is here on the slide for the four P4C states. So again, wanted to highlight the importance of connecting people living with HIV that you're seeing in your centers that may or may not be insured or not insured, don't have access to health insurance, to go to these ADAP contacts or connect with these ADAP contacts to help them have access to the resources that ADAP has to offer for medication and other connectivity there as well.
Yeah, I'm not seeing any more questions. So if you have any final thoughts before I wrap it up.
That's it. I think thank you. Just wanted to say thank you again to Mayotech for inviting me to speak. And I hope you are all able to get something new, a new strategy from this presentation to take back to your organization and your decision makers to really move forward and ensure sustainability of your HIV programs. I wanted to offer that if you have any other questions, you can, of course, reach out to your Mayotech contacts, but feel free to reach out to me directly. My email and phone direct phone line are here. We are based in Washington, D.C., so again, we're on East Coast time, and if you are ever in the D.C. area, feel free to come by and visit us at Health HIV as well, and we can chat in person about some of the discussion today as well.
All right. Thank you again for participating in today's webinar. And thank you, Ms. Tonelli, for that excellent presentation. If you have any additional questions for the P4C project or for Ms. Tonelli, please email us at p4chivtac@mayotech.com. Take care, everybody, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.